The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Carter, I slurred that. Coming to you from the Carter Super Studio. Welcome! Welcome to The Big Show. Our top stories this hour. We like to call it The Big Lead. Before I get into those top stories, I saw this little story. Oh my gosh. Do you know how much we could eliminate from government and nobody's life except the, you know, government workers who would have to find private sector jobs? But do you know how much we could eliminate from government and it would not negatively impact you or me or society one tiny bit? And I really mean this. I think we could, at most levels, city, county, state, federal, I think we could get rid of two-thirds of government at every level, and nobody's life would be negatively affected. Government would have to revert to what they should be doing, which is the essentials. Having a roadway for us to drive on, public transit, sure. They got to do schools. It's constitutional. Parks, there's no private sector motivation to do parks. And then everything else. Are you kidding me? So LNI in our state, they are the agency, Labor and Industries, that has been going around fining businesses hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases because they stayed open so their employees could collect a paycheck. Employees who weren't able to get through to the unemployment scam. Employees who were afraid that they weren't going to be able to put food on the table or pay their rent. And so a lot of businesses stayed open. And LNI goes out, and because of some rat fink snitches around our state. Yeah, by the way, when government starts turning the citizens against each other and encouraging people to become snitches, that's the wrong direction, man. Okay, so LNI just released a statement that at most DEI events, henceforth, they will include land acknowledgments as a way to honor the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Team, DEI, at L&I. The Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Team will offer land acknowledgments at the beginning of most of its events. They're going to talk about how we live and work on stolen land. The enrollment coordinator for this program says it offers recognition and respect to those whose traditional homeland we stand on. For none stand on their own, and we are still here. You know, if you feel that way, get out. If you are expressing your guilt for being on what you call stolen land, then how can you continue? Just say, well, I acknowledge it's stolen, but I'm going to keep working and living on it. Can you imagine somebody comes into your house, steals your laptops, they catch them, and he says, I acknowledge that I stole your laptops, but I'm keeping them. Oh, okay, it's all good. As long as you acknowledge it, it is nothing but this radical, again, critical race theory. Everybody is either an oppressor or the oppressed. Everybody is either a bully or a victim. And now they're going to waste time. This government agency is going to waste time on a land acknowledgement at the beginning of every major event. What does that do? Seriously, using my laptop thief analogy, what does that do? Who does that help? All it does is it wastes taxpayer money. Two-thirds of government we could get rid of today. I could do it. You give me the budget for the city, the state, the county. Oh, the county. Oh, would I slash the county? and then the United States of America. By midnight, I could have reduced two-thirds of the taxes, two-thirds of the spending, and everybody would say, wow, life's actually better now. It's amazing. So anyway, congratulations to Elle and I for their bravery. If there's anything I love, it's bravery. Oh, it's such a bold step they're taking. They're such leaders. I wonder if they start every meeting, like every government meeting. I want to thank my colleague for her leadership. Oh, man. Okay, with that as mere prelude, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
I heard a Hannah Scott story this morning that fascinated me about how the ACLU went to court on behalf of a bunch of people who had their license suspended, and then they were driving with a suspended license, and they got pulled over again, and because of that, they, you know, face a misdemeanor, fines. You can even go to court for a few days. Well, the ACLU came to the rescue. And they had filed a lawsuit down in Thurston County on behalf of people who drive with a suspended license. By the way, fun fact, if we got 10% of the cars off the road, we would have no traffic problems at all. I've proven that. I've given you the stats on the Friday before a three-day weekend when 10% of people take time off and they're rarely is any traffic in the morning or afternoon drive. All you have to do is take 10% of the cars off the road. Do you realize that right now, if you're driving down I-5, up 405, do you realize that right now, one-third of the cars on the road are not legally allowed to be on the road? It's people who are driving either without insurance or with a suspended license or no license at all. So look to your left. If you're in the middle lane right now, look to your right. If it's not either of those people, it's you! Okay, so anyway, so the ACLU went and said, we filed this lawsuit because it's unfair to suspend the license of poor people.
So we brought a lawsuit on behalf of four Washington drivers who've had their license suspended for failing to pay the tickets that they got for traffic infractions. And these licenses were suspended without the Department of Licensing ever asking if they could afford to pay those tickets. So you get a moving violation, you get a ticket. And if you pay the ticket, your life goes on as normal. And for a lot of people, you know, a $150 ticket is not pleasant, but, you know, doable. And they pay it and move on.
Okay, so if you can afford a ticket, you need to pay the ticket. If you can't afford the ticket, they now have gotten a judge to rule that you didn't need to pay it. And that's her point, that some people cannot afford the ticket.
But for a lot of people, $150 or whatever the ticket price is more than they can afford. And so they don't pay. And then their license gets suspended. And we think that that is really problematic, that, you know, poverty is not a crime and the state can't punish people simply for being poor.
Okay. They're not punishing people for being poor. They're punishing people for getting several moving violations, so many that their license gets suspended, and then for illegally driving with a suspended license. They're not punishing people for being poor. And I feel like I can uniquely, somewhat uniquely, talk about this because I grew up dirt poor. And into my driving days, when I was 16 years old, I was dirt poor. And just because I was poor, I wasn't a lousy, careless driver. And I didn't get moving violations. I don't know how many moving violations I've had in my lifetime. I've been driving for 43 years, maybe three. And they've been spaced way far apart. I can't remember the last one. I think my last moving violation was in a national park in Utah in a rental car. Just because you're poor doesn't mean you need to drive lousy. Now, maybe the conditions that have contributed to your financial condition are the same conditions that contribute to you driving poorly. I mean, there are correlations in life. But here's the thing. They say, well, if they can't afford to pay the ticket, then the state shouldn't be able to fine them. Well, why can't they afford to pay the ticket? I mean, I couldn't have afforded to pay a ticket when I was working 40 hours a week at minimum wage. So I worked 70 hours a week. And I worked hard enough so I could keep my head above water. But again, we're just headed toward, and by the way, I'll explain why I think this is absolutely unconstitutional. But we have a judge down in Thurston County now who says that, okay, the courts are going to make sure somebody is able to pay before we suspend their license.
So our lawsuit argued that this is a constitutional violation, that the Department of Licensing has to provide some sort of process. We call it due process. To make sure that people didn't pay, it wasn't willful that they didn't pay, but that they actually just couldn't before they can suspend the license. And so on Friday, Thurston County Superior Court judge agreed with us and found that it was unconstitutional for DOL to suspend licenses as to indigent people without first asking if they're able to pay the tickets.
Okay, they say it's unconstitutional to make somebody pay the ticket if they can't afford it. How in the world is that judge's ruling constitutional? I have the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution right in front of me here. All persons born or naturalized in the United States subject to the jurisdiction are citizens, blah, 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 blah. And the nation, our government, shall not deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. How is this judge's ruling constitutional? How is it that somebody who works real hard, maybe works two jobs, is making $60,000 a year, and they get multiple tickets and a suspended license, they have to pay it? But somebody who really hasn't been looking, deciding to live off the unemployment checks that the government's sending out, and even though there are lots of job openings right now, it's easier to not work. And then judge, you don't have to pay. The hard worker there's got to pay. You don't. What I'm tired of, as maybe you've gathered over the last couple of years, is that we are abandoning the Constitution of the United States and the abandoning of the state of Washington Constitution because we've got a bunch of radical leftist judges. The ACLU used to be a great organization that was about civil liberties. And the ACLU used to believe in the Constitution. They don't anymore. It's just another radical leftist organization. And the thing is that they say that they're doing all these things because it feels good. But we are still a constitutional republic. And we are supposed to do everything within the confines and the restraints that's supposed to be assigned to government by the Constitution. But I do not understand how in the state of Washington, you've got two people who commit the exact same offenses, and the one who works hard and makes a good middle-class salary has to pay a fine, and the one who, maybe through choice, is unemployed, does not have to pay. If somebody can explain to me how that is constitutional under the 14th Amendment, I would love to hear it. I wish judges were free to come on and talk about their decisions. Most of them are too cowardly, in all honesty. It's really interesting that you are in a profession where you probably aspired to that because you loved the give and take of arguments. But when you get these resistance in a robe judges and the ones who decide to set law and ignore the Constitution, you think they'll ever come on and defend that? No, of course not. All right, up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
So I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Jay Inslee was a big hero this morning because he, after 2 weeks of him and Dr. Duchin at the King County Health, and they said, oh, King County hasn't met the metrics, so there's going to be a King County rollback from phase three to phase two. And then this morning, Jay Inslee says, we're not going to roll it back. We're going to pause the rollback.
Good morning, my fellow Washingtonians. Today I'm announcing a two-week pause on our phased reopening plan.
Okay, what I said is this is proof that Jay Inslee and Dr. Duchin and all of these people who are controlling our lives, manipulating the lives of good, hard business owners, hardworking, they're hardworking, business owners, they have no clue what they're doing. They told us last week King County's going to get rolled back. They told us yesterday King's going to get rolled back. This morning, King County's not going to get rolled back. And I said, they just blow with the wind. And I got a bunch of text messages from people who said, wow, Dory, come on. Inslee's damned when he does and damned when he doesn't. You would have complained if he had rolled King County back this morning. But this illustrates why I have been so critical of the Data Daddy, because they have absolutely no data that they're following. They have absolutely no health benefits to anything they do. Explain this to me. 3 weeks ago or whatever it was, Pierce County didn't meet these metrics. So they rolled Pierce County back from phase three to phase two. Today, King County did not meet those exact same metrics. And they're not going to roll King County back. Why is that? Well, Pierce County is a little more conservative than King County. Pierce County actually elects your occasional Republican. Pierce County doesn't necessarily buy all the stuff the Data Daddy serves up to us. The radical left in King County, Jay Inslee can do no wrong. And so, yes, I'm very critical when they are controlling and in many cases destroying lives. And I mean that in a literal sense. There are children who have died because of what they've done with our schools. There are business owners who have cried because of what they're doing to small business and flip-flopping the way they do. They've absolutely nothing to go on. Okay, I have some more audio from Jay Inslee's presser this morning that illustrates everything that I'm talking about. I have to play this for you. Let me take a real quick time out. We're going to check the local news for you. Then we'll hear more from the Data Daddy and lots more from me. All coming up here at the Dory Monson Show. I love you. Yeah, you listening right now. I love you. Because you tell me all the time that, and I know a lot of people who disagree with me listen to the show. I love you too. But I hear from people, I just got a really sweet email. I don't have time to pull it up because I just heard something in the news that is inspiring this in me. But I heard from somebody this morning who said, you know, thank you for your show. It makes me feel like I'm not alone in how I think about this world. And I hear that from a lot of people. And like I said, I appreciate you if you disagree with me. I appreciate you listening. But I also really appreciate and love you who says, man, I agree with a lot of stuff you say because it makes me feel like I'm not alone in the world. Now, what is this rambling monologue about? So I'm listening to Aaron's newscast there. And he has a soundbite with a student at the University of Washington. So the government's going to make every kid get the most untested vaccine in our nation's history injected into them, even though they're going to be safe and fine, even if they get COVID. But the government's making them do this. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I am vaccinated. But do I trust pharmaceutical companies? No. Do I trust our government? No. Do I trust when our pharmaceutical companies and our government are getting together to tell us what we must do? Heck no! So I'm listening to this newscast, and I hear the soundbite from Cairo 7, a student talking about Jay Inslee and Anna Marie Kauser, whatever the name of the UW president is, mandate. They're not making the faculty do it, who are a million times more at risk if they actually get COVID because they're older. They're not making the faculty or the administration get the shot, but the kids must get vaccinated. And so my head almost exploded when I heard the soundbite in the newscast just.
If that's what it takes to be safe, then that's what it takes.
I mean, I think it's smart if we're going back in person.
If that's what it takes to be safe, then that's what it. Wait, how do you say
if that's what it takes to be safe, then that's what it takes.
I mean,
okay, if that's what it takes to be safe, then that's what it takes. I don't want to accuse this. I don't know this kid. But as a nation, as a region, when did we become this wimpy? Is safety the ultimate pursuit in life? Is safety more important than freedom? Do you really think the government cares about keeping you safe, young man? Because you've got a lot to learn about government and how they view us and how they treat us and how they approach us. So you will let a partnership of government and pharmaceutical companies inject and I'm not telling, I think that, you know, two of my three daughters are vaccinated. My third has decided she's going to get vaccinated now. She's kind of wavering a little bit. I think it's fine to get vaccinated, even if you're a younger person. I don't think it does you any good, but I think it's fine if you choose to do it. Your body, your life. Well, not according to the government. Your body, our life. We make the decisions. But life is not about safety. If you've ever climbed a mountain or jumped out of an airplane or driven in a car, for crying out loud, life's not about safety. Life's about living. And stop trusting the pharmaceutical government cabal. Maybe it makes sense for you. Maybe it's the right decision. But make that decision yourself. Weigh what the downside risk is if you actually get COVID. Weigh what the downside risk of the vaccine could be in 1 or 3 or 5 or 10 years. I don't know what it is. But that's the metrics through which we should all be viewing this. And it makes me sick to hear young people in the bloom of life, when you should be daring and adventurous and you should live life to the very fullest. If that's what it takes to be safe, then that's what it is. And again, I don't want to pick on this one kid, but I'm picking on this mentality. I'm picking on this mindset. This is so sick, and it is so wrong. Make up your own minds. Maybe you'll come to the same conclusion. But don't do it because Jay Inslee and Pfizer tell you you must. And live life without a dose of safety. You want a safe life? Don't go back to campus. Do all online learning. Order all of your food from Amazon Fresh. You don't ever have to go to the grocery store or to a restaurant. Get your occasional change of underwear, since you never are going to leave the house again, from Amazon. They'll send you some new boxers every few years. You can probably even get on a regular delivery schedule every few years. I'm sure there's some boxer company that'll do that for you. And then you'll be safe. Wouldn't that be perfect? To have a safe life? And we've all learned that by not going outside, by having everything come to us, no traffic, no car crashes, no vaccine, COVID, you'll be safe. What a wondrous life you will live. Isn't it amazing how long was that? That was a 5-second soundbite. That's what a 5-second soundbite can do to me. Jeez. Okay, I got some more Jay Inslee to play. We're going to make it part of our awesome audio coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. We're going to make the Gov part of our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Okay, so he announced that King County is not rolling back, even though the same metrics got Pierce County rolled back a couple weeks ago. They are all over the place. They have absolutely no public health reasoning for anything that they are doing. But Jay Inslee said he does expect business to comply.
Look, non-adherence to our currently existing safety protocols put people in danger. That's just a fact. So most counties still have a 50% capacity limitation for restaurants and other businesses. In three counties, it's at 25%. It is our expectation that responsible owners will follow these requirements.
I'm sorry. When he says non-compliance puts people in danger, compliance killed children in our state. The suicide rate was up in the last year as kids were forced to stay at home. Domestic violence was up. Don't tell me that non-compliance puts people in danger when compliance killed children, put a lot of kids and women in danger. We've seen the stats, Mr. Governor. Oh, but if you don't comply, they're going to come down on you.
But not everyone has, unfortunately. And I do want folks to know that we take these protocols very seriously. We've had about 100,000 complaints filed over the pandemic that have been filed with our Emergency Operations Center. We've had thousands of inspections, and the department has administered about $7.3 million in fines already for the few folks that are not complying. We'll be continuing that enforcement to make sure that we preserve the safety of all Washingtonians.
He says that with pride. We've already fined people $7.3 million, and we'll keep doing it if you don't submit. So Essex Porter at Cairo 7, he asked Inslee about how they're changing the rules, how they're just flip-flopping, how businesses are supposed to know. And if you're a business owner, you have to plan ahead. You can't plan ahead when the people making the rules are all over the place.
Good morning, Governor. You've been touching on this, but in our newsroom, we've just received a text from one of the restaurant owners who says he just changed the rules again. How can we trust the process?
Well, I hope that restaurant is happy that I changed the rules again so he can stay at 50%. I can't believe he wouldn't believe that was a good thing. So really happy that we've changed the rules to allow restaurant owners to stay open at 50%. I have to believe that would be a popular position with the restaurant industry. Now, he can stay at 25% if he'd like. That's his decision. I'm not making him do so. So we think this would be well received.
What a smug, condescending attitude. I mean, that's spoken like somebody who has never signed the front of a paycheck in his life. And that's the problem. You have people, I know he's private practice for like 2 years, then he got into government. When you have people who have been career bureaucrats, who have no idea what it's like to run a small business, who have no idea that you have to have a business plan that you can actually project somewhat accurately. And then he's so snide. He is so smug and condescending about it. So Brandi Crews, then, in the press conference today, she followed up on Essex Porter's question.
As for the gratitude restaurant owners should feel for today's decision that you referenced when Essex asked you a question, you know, we know that planning for ups and downs for restaurants is hard. It takes time. And there was no indication before 11 a.m. today that you would change your mind. Just as there was no indication 3 weeks ago that you were going to change your mind on the metrics until the last minute. So what do you say to skeptics who see all of this as just completely arbitrary?
I am fully aware of the difficulties that people have in this situation. If you're trying to plan how much food to order or plan your staffing, it is a challenge to have these changes. There is no way to diminish the difficulty that the businesses have in that regard. But you have to make a decision. Are you going to save lives and accept some of those difficulties or not? We've made a decision to save lives. And as far as the issue of, well, we didn't get advance notice, look, there's always a decision where you make a decision, and until you make a decision and announce it, you can't give advance notice. If you give advance notice, that's when you've made the decision.
He has no empathy. He has no business sense, and he has no sense of direction on how to manage a health crisis. That we are certain of. And I'm glad that Essex Porter, Brandi Crews, we have reporters who, you know, are asking him. I mean, they're pointing out to him, you're all over the place. You are arbitrary. You are random in what you enforce. Okay, I played you some audio at the beginning of the show in the first hour, and I do now know the identity of this teacher in California who's pulled over by a police officer. I asked you, what would you do if this woman was your kid's teacher? She was recording the cop on her cell phone while she was driving, and this is about as bad as a person's attitude can possibly get.
I don't know why I'm being harassed today, because I was going under the speed limit. I was going at 38.
Yes, you are, ma'am. Good morning.
And the speed limit is 40, and I was going 38, so why are you harassing me?
You're correct. I pulled you over
because you're a murderer. Yes, I started to record because you're a murderer.
You can't be on your cell phone while you're driving.
I wasn't on my phone. I was recording you because you scared me.
You can't use your cell phone while you're recording.
I can record you.
May I have your driver's license?
It's at my apartment.
What's your apartment?
It's at my home. I'm just taking my son to his...
Do you have your driver's license?
I mistakenly left it at home.
Do you have a picture of your driver's license?
Yes, I do.
May I have it?
And can you call your supervisor, please?
I already did. He's on his way.
Good, because you're a murderer.
Okay.
And so you're giving me a cell phone ticket? Is that why you're harassing me?
Not harassment. I am enforcing the law.
I have a right to and record the police when they're harassing me.
By all means, but you can't do it while you're driving.
I wasn't texting or none of that.
You had that picture?
You scared me and made me think you were going to murder me.
Okay, well, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Well, that's not just a feeling. You're a murderer.
Okay. Can you zoom in on that for me,
Sure.
Dear? Thank you.
And I'm perfectly legal, and I'm a teacher.
Congratulations.
You're a murderer.
What's your last name? I can't see that there.
Well,
if
here you
stop,
go,
stop
murderer.
Shaking. Zoom in on that for
no,
me,
No, because
huh?
You're scaring me. You're threatening to kill me and my son. Can you give me
okay.
the...
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. You keep smiling.
Yeah,
you're on camera.
You're trying to threaten to kill me.
I didn't say that.
You're the one who's... Crazy.
Hold that still. I can't see that. Is this your car?
Yes, it is. You're trying to say I stole my own car because you're jealous?
Yeah,
is that what
I don't
that's
think
about?
So. You wait for me right here, okay?
You're jealous.
Citation. All you need to do is just get your signature. He's only citing you for using your cell phone while you're driving. That's it.
Here you go, bam. Sign inside the red box right there.
For him being a Mexican racist. What is that name? Gasso.
Sign the citation, ma'am.
Here you go, Mexican racist. You're always going to be a Mexican. You'll never be white. You know that, right? You'll never be white, which is what you really want to be.
There you go, dear.
You want to be white.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a good day.
You want to be white?
Well, an African-American woman. She's a teacher at a community college in Southern California. Great role modeling for her son. Great role model. Okay, I got to get out of here. Tom Curley Show's coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. See you tomorrow. High noon. High noon.
You about to break yourself. Believe that. Bye, Felicia.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.